This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at DLineMinutes.
All right, welcome to this week's episode of DoubleLine Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry with Sam Lau.
Hey, hey.
Sam, it's I have my in my notes just after the close, but it is not after the close. It's before the close here on March 28th. It's the last business day of the quarter. We have a holiday tomorrow. Early close in the bond market today. Stock market closes at I think normal time today, but a holiday tomorrow for the stock market. And just keep in mind, you know, liquidity dries up. Easter Monday is a holiday in a lot of countries across the world. Could be some less liquidity out there also on Monday. And finally, I guess, Sam, did you want to give a shout out to one of our avid listeners that you actually heard listening to the podcast?
No. I mean, it's a person that doesn't need to be mentioned there.
But he knows who he is.
That's right. Rolling up on me on the street there.
All right. Well, why don't we get into the, since we got a lot to talk about today in terms of markets, why don't we get it right into the where are we?
Yeah, so as you said, it's quarter end, it's also month end, and it's also basically we'll go through the week to date and the year to date as well here, since that lines up with the quarter to date. But let's see here, starting out, we had a strong week across pretty much all markets, it looks like, this week on a week-to-date basis. The S&P 500 up 20 basis points here. 9 of 11 sectors are in the green. The only two sectors that are down thus far on this early podcast recording for the week-to-date is technology and comm services. Comm services down about 20 basis points right now, and tech down about 80 basis points. Best performer so far on the week is utilities and real estate. You know, some of the more sectors that are a little bit more sensitive to rates, the treasury rates there. So it's interesting to see that they're up the most on this week to date basis. Looking across the curve here for the windows of time, at least for the S&P 500 on the month to date, strong going into the close of the month to date for the S&P 500, up over 3% thus far at this time of recording. On a year to date basis, it's up over 10%. Same goes for that quarter to date as we're matching that time frame. For the month to date, the best performer there was energy sector, up over 10%. Right now, we've got a clean sweep for the month to date, everything in the positive, with consumer discretionary bringing up the rear, but still hanging on to this positive return for the month to date basis with a positive 10 basis points. We'll see if we can get it to close, maintain that positive sign going into the close here. And then as we move over to the fixed income market, looking at the 2-year part of the curve, that is right now at a yield of 4.6%, pretty much flat on the week-to-date basis. That's 36 basis points higher, though, than where we started the year at the 2-year note, where it had closed the last trading day of 2023 with a yield of 4.25%. Looking at the 10-year yield, it's right now it's at 4.2%. up about 30 basis points higher in yield versus the start of the year there. And then for the long bond, the 30-year yield is at 4.3%, up about 30 basis points from the beginning of the year. On a month-to-date basis, for the most part, we're looking at right now, it looks like the 2-year note is flat on a month-to-date basis, and both the 10 and the 30-year yields are rallied by about 5 basis points in the yield. So what that means this period for the broad bond index, the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate, that's up so far about 20 basis points on the week to date, matching that kind of week to date return at this point in time with the S&P 500. On the month to date, also a strong performance here, up about 100 basis points for the month to date, but it's still holding on to this negative sign in front of the year to date number and quarter date, which are both down equal amounts at down 65 basis points. Looking at it for the year-to-date basis, we still kind of maintain that that trend that we've been talking about for the last 3 months or so, with the traditional sectors of the bond market, those that comprise the bond, the Bloomberg bond aggregate, those have negative performance on the year-to-date. IG down 70 basis points, Treasuries down 80 basis points, and agency MBS down a point. Everything else in the sector, in the cohorts that we talk about, are positive thus far. Bank loans up 180 basis points, EM up 170, and high yield up 160 basis points. So from the non-traditional side, pretty strong year, traditional year-to-date numbers, and then traditional side of things, let's see if we can, what we can do about that, what the bond market can do with those negative prints in front of those sectors there. Moving over to commodities, had a strong week as well. The Bloomberg commodity index up 90 basis points week to date so far. Month to date looks like it's going to close over 3%. And then for the quarter and year to dates, those look like they're going to be positive as well, up over 2% in those two periods there. But looking at WTI crude oil front month futures, it looks like we managed to close the week here if it holds just above
with an 82 handle here. So it looks like it's at 82.75 for the front month of WTI crude oil. Month-to-date basis, that's up just over 5% on a price basis and up over 15% on a year-to-date basis. But that 15% year-to-date performance on WTI crude oil, while looking pretty strong, is just blown away by, I don't know if you've, you know, we've been talking a little bit about this on the desk, but front month futures for cocoa, those have more than doubled on the year-to-date basis. Looks like they started the, or ended the year of 2023 with a price of 4,200. Right now they're at 9,700. So that is up about 130% on the front month future basis. I was looking at it, if you actually own those futures contracts and had to roll them over, you know, the past few months on a year-to-date basis, given the shape of the curve, you would have also not only gained on the price return, but then also on that roll yield. So you would have had a year-to-date return of somewhere in the 140% for year-to-date on cocoa. All of that is being driven by massive supply disruption for, I believe it's out of the West, some of the West African countries there that are dealing with drought-like conditions that really impacted that supply. So for those people who may or may not have exposure to cocoa on this year-to-date basis, you know, way to go.
I was going to say that, unfortunately, if you're an index investor, cocoa, I think, barely missed the inclusion for it to be in the BCOM. It was like, I think they had the limit of had to be at least 50 basis points, and it was like 0.42 or something. So barely missed that inclusion in the BCOM.
Yeah, Mark Kimbrough and I were looking at it last week, and it is in the S&P GSCI index, but it is, in terms of the weight, I believe it is something less than a percent of the overall index. So while contributing some, given that stellar performance here to date,
not as much as people would probably would wish in terms of that allocation. If given,
I mean, it even it's even outperformed Bitcoin.
That's right. I mean, your favorite asset there within the cohorts that we look at, or within the classes that we look at, that Bitcoin is up 70% on the basis, 15% positive month to date, and 11% just on the week alone. So now it's it was at that 69,000 handle for a while. Now it's just spitting distance, as I like to say, to 71,000 per coin there. So see how it gets there. But with that wrap up of the markets for the week, the month, as well as the quarter slash year to date numbers. Do you want to kick us off on what happened on the macro?
Yeah, front? We did get, it was a kind of a light week. On Tuesday, we did get house price indices out. It came out the 20 city season month over month number came in at 0.14%, a little bit weaker than expected. We're expected to be 20 basis points. That brought the year over year number then was 6.59%, right on the estimates at 6.6. That's for the 20 city. The kind of overall one was 6.03%. So, you know, kind of that mid single digits there for house prices, kind of that seems much more sustainable than those levels that we were seeing earlier in the kind of this cycle. We also got the a GDP update there on Thursday. That GDP update came in at 3.4% updated or revised up from 3.2 last the first number. We get one more, I think we get one more estimate there. So it was just revised up slightly. What we read, or what Brian Kimmel put out, was that inventories continue to detract. So that's good. That could be good for future GDP, but services actually contributed more than they initially thought. Also, we got jobless claims as typical there on Thursday. I guess that was this morning. Usually it's not, I'm usually thinking about it was yesterday, but it's this morning. Initial jobless claims came at 210,000, right on the screws there. 212 was the estimate. Continuing claims came in at 1.82 million, 1.815 was the estimate, so pretty close there. As Mark Campbell put on in our write up here, nothing to see here. Both came in close to estimates, kind of spot on there with the 4 week moving averages are really kind of right there where we are today. Also, now kind of interestingly, even though the bond market and the stock market on holiday tomorrow, apparently the government's still working and they are sending out their statistics tomorrow. So we get personal income coming in. It's estimated to be 0.4%, down from 1.0 last month. Personal spending is expected to be 0.5, up from 0.2. So we'll update everybody on what that number was next week. And also we get the Fed's preferred inflation gauge, the PCE numbers tomorrow. Looks like the year-over-year headline PCE is expected to be 2.5%, up from 2.4, and the core PCE, which I guess this is what the Fed wants to get down to, that 2.0 number, is estimated to be flat at 2.8. So we've got a long ways to go there for the Fed to kind of feel more comfortable, and I think that's kind of what Sam, what you and Mark were talking about last week, in when you were kind of wrapping up the press conference and the Fed meeting, that we got a lot more work to do here on the PCE side of things before the Fed can feel comfortable enough to maybe cut rates. And I guess that brings us to that's a good lead into where the market's pricing in. The market's right now pricing in still three cuts for 2024. And it looks like we 10% probability of a cut in May, but it goes up to about a 67% chance of a cut in June. So if that happens, then we kind of go up and get more, another cut there in September and then one in December. So, you know, kind of spaced out, I guess that's really, if things kind of go as they are forecast and we muddle along here, then it makes sense that the Fed would slowly start cutting rates, but nothing really too much in the terms of upcoming. We'll see what the data comes up with. And kind of interestingly enough, I looked at the reverse repo numbers this morning, and that number is now up to $518 billion. So it dropped to, I think, like $400 and change was its low, I guess. And it bounced back up. So when everyone was looking at the trend and saying this is going to, the reverse repo is going to zero or going to $200 billion, which could be like kind of where the floor was, you know, in the second quarter of this year. So, starting here next month, that really looks like it's slowing down. And if that pace continues, to kind of look at this, at the chart, the decline, we really could not get down to those kind of more where the Fed would think more normal levels, really by the end of the year. So it may take a lot longer for that number to come to where the Fed is more concerned about it and more concerned about the illiquidity or the less liquidity that would provide.
Yeah, we will see, if that holds. While you're talking about that, I did pull it up. You're close there. I mean, you're on the money there. So we did get in the four handle. It was just under $100 billion less than we are today. The low hitting there in the middle of March. at a low of 414 billion so far. So maybe a little bit of a tick up there, 25% increase in from that basis versus the trillions that we're at just about a year ago. We're at just over 2 trillion in that reverse repo. Yeah. So it's pretty interesting how far it's come down. Not necessarily quietly, but it's people have certainly been noticing that. But with that, looks like we have 4.5 more weeks until the next FOMC meeting. So we'll see how this warp function continues to shift over time as well, especially if we do get some more, some surprises in terms of what we saw with the inflation data that came out prior to this last meeting that we had for the FOMC. See how that shakes out over time. But with regards to what we're keeping an eye on next week, for next week's episode, we'll give our insight into what we're seeing with what came out, what eventually will have come out tomorrow for the PCE data, as you talked about there. But in addition to that, on Monday, we do have the ISM manufacturing PMI data that's expected to remain in contractionary territory, but there is a little bit of an uptick there. Moving up to 48.5 is the estimate right now. We'll also have the JOLTS data, and that's coming out on Tuesday as that precedes Pizza Friday, as we like to call it, and more formally known as Jobs Friday, which is the first Friday of each month. Before then, on Wednesday, we'll have also the ISM services data, which is expected to remain flat in expansionary territory at a level of 52.6 on that index. On that day also, preceding the jobs number, is the ADP employment change data, which is, some people try to use that as a proxy to kind of guesstimate the direction that both the payrolls data from the establishment survey is going to shake out, as well as how the employment change from the household survey will play out when that comes out from the BLS data. But that's expected to be slightly high over the previous period, estimated at 150,000 jobs in terms of positive job creation for that change over the prior month. And then finally, as I've been alluding to, on Friday, you'll have the BLS employment data come out with the unemployment rate expected to tick down slightly to 3.8% versus 3.9% in February. And then for the change in non-farm payrolls, that's also expected to that's expected to go the other way, but down as well. That's expected to be 59,000 fewer payrolls reported this period at 216,000 is the overall estimate there. The thing that we'll be looking at to see kind of the composition of the change within the labor force is the labor force participation rate. That in the previous period was 62.5%, but there is no estimates provided for that. So we'll be sure to report back what we see from that Friday report.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see on Monday whether the ISM manufacturing kind of it's been below 50 for so long, and we had the kind of a divergence there with the S&P Global manufacturing. I think that was above 50 last time they put.
Yeah,
that
ticked up about. It's been the last 3 months have been over the 50 mark for the S&P Global Manufacturing.
Yeah. So we're looking for confirmation on, we kind of want both signals to be above 50 to really get confirmation of an expansion, and really haven't seen that from the ISMs yet.
That's right.
And then of course, obviously Pizza Friday, big day. I was looking to see, because the Fed meeting is on May 1st, obviously that's a Wednesday. So where are we going to get? Is Jay going to have the early look on the jobs numbers for the May 3rd? I think it's probably May 3rd that comes out, because that's not the first business day of the month. Is Jay going to have that early look there? And is that going to be something that he's going to, obviously if he does, that's going to factor into his decision. But we'll obviously we got one more first before we see what happens there. But it could be interesting timing based on all that data, with the Fed being so data dependent. When that data comes out and what he knows or what he doesn't know before they make their decision.
Yeah, that's true.
I thought it was interesting that, to kind of back up a second to Waller was talking about no rate cuts this year, and people were pretty much discounting it as in he's not Jay. So no one really cares what anyone says other than Jay is really the market mover out there, as we've talked about in the past, Sam. But I guess with that, I guess that wraps it up for a nice short holiday or pre-holiday podcast here, Sam.
Yeah, I want to thank everyone to all of our listeners out there on Double Line Minutes. Don't forget, you can follow us on the X at D-Line Minutes, where we do post our topic of the weeks as we have them, as we schedule out these podcasts ahead of time. So for those who want the early look on what the topic will be, they can check it out. That usually comes out. Jeff, you usually put it out the morning of, right, of the day that we do it. They can also hit us up on the X, of course, to send us any questions or suggestions, you know, more importantly, for what they, you know, listeners would like to hear on the topic week. If there's a current event that you want us to cover, you know, we'll do our best to give you some insight on that. Or if there's just a topic in mind that you have around financial markets that you can't quite wrap your head around and you like some help trying to make some sense around it, go ahead and send us those suggestions again on the X at D-Line Minutes, or you can send it via email at minutes@doubleline.com.
I did see that we did have a listener post us a question while we were recording, so maybe we'll hit that up next week. Don't forget, our website is doubleline.com. YouTube channel is youtube.com/doubleline capital. We have both Jeffrey Gundlach and Ken Shinoda's FOMC reactions up. Make sure also to follow the other podcasts on our platform. If rumor has it that you guys are working on another episode, Sam, make sure to follow them there at Sherman Show Pod. Thanks for tuning in, and hope everyone has a great long weekend.
Yeah, thanks everyone, and good luck out there.
This presentation was recorded on the date indicated. Views and opinions expressed herein are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the views of Double Line Capital LP, its affiliates, or employees, should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities, and are subject to change without notice. Double Line has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. The presentation represents Double Line's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media, in any form, without the express written permission of Double Line. Double Line has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from Double Line, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither Double Line nor any of its affiliates makes any representations or warranties regarding the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this material. Liability, including any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is explicitly disclaimed. Double Line is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice. The receipt of this presentation by any listener should not be construed as the provision of investment advice by any Double Line entity or individual, nor does it imply that such person becomes a client of any Double Line entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but it does not imply low risk. Copyright 2023, Double Line Capital.